Welcome to the Dyad Presents, a video game music podcast. I'm the Dyad, and this is Veritex. As I often do, we're starting off the show today with a high-energy track. It comes from the game Veritex, and this track is called Ruined Area. But before we get into more details on the game, some quick top-of-the-show biz. First, I just want to say a big OMG! Alberto Jose Gonzalez somehow stumbled upon the show and left a super nice comment on the Gunpei Yokoi Part 1 episode. That basically made my decade. It's a super cool thing, and if you're listening out there, McAlby, I just wanted to say thanks. I don't want to tip my hand, but there is an AJG soundtrack I've been listening to recently that may make an appearance soon. Anyway, that was just... Well, let's just say I never expected anything like that when I first started doing the show. One other thing before we move on. Alan has lost access to one of his magic wands he uses to edit the show. If there's a change in, not quality, but I guess just like a change in sound, that's probably the reason. Hope to keep on keeping on without any issue, though. Last episode was the first one to use the new setup, so you can kind of use that as your litmus test, I guess. Just an FYI, people notice things. Getting back to Veritex, the composers responsible for the OST are Hitoshi Sakimoto, Masaharu Iwata, and Yoshio Furukawa. Although they were credited under aliases YMOH.S, Rezon, and JKL Furukawa. I saw in at least one place that this track was credited to Furukawa alone, but I don't really see any kind of reliable confirmation on that, so it's worth mentioning, but take it with a grain of salt. As for the game itself, it's a vertical shooter developed by Opera House Inc. and published by Asmik. One review I saw said it had vague organic themes, and from the little I've seen of the game, even that seems generous. The game received lukewarm reviews across the board. I also saw the game compared to NEC's Star Soldier. What I found interesting about that, though, is it is said to play very similarly to the NES title. I don't know, I don't mean to bag on the genre, but to me it's very hard to stand out as a shmup. Cuphead, it ain't. Anyway, let's move on. I've got 8 tracks on this episode, so I'm gonna try to keep the blabbing light. Yeah, right. We haven't visited NES Town in a while, which is surprising to me, especially since I probably have the most personal experience with the NES and SNES as far as console games go. So I'm going to course correct a little bit here. From the game Base Wars Cyber Stadium series, composed by Shigemasa Matsuo and Tomoko Sumiyama, this is Parts Shop. Cyber Stadium series Base Wars is far more commonly known as simply Base Wars. Developed by Konami and published by Ultra Games, the game is a futuristic take on the sport of baseball. In an interesting bit of commentary, the game takes place in the 24th century, where the owners have decided that they're going to replace the players due to their outrageous salary demands. No word on how much money the owners are making in this scenario, but if it's anything like today's sports, suffice it to say that it's much, much more than the players. The game itself is really similar to Super Baseball 2020, another robot baseball effort, this time from Neo Geo, that was ported to a handful of other consoles. The reason I mention it is because I can't remember if it was Base Wars or Super Baseball 2020, but in my middle school, there was some bizarre reward program for I think it was like a gold star program. You know, if you did something good, you got a certain amount of points. And when you had racked up enough points, you got a ticket to this place at lunch you could visit called Perks. I don't remember what Perks stood for, but it P-E-R-K-S, some sort of acronym. And inside of Perks, there were a bunch of TVs with a bunch of different video game consoles. PCs too, I think. But I remember that on one of the systems, there was one of these robot baseball games. I really want to say it was Base Wars, but for the life of me, I just can't remember what video game I played at lunch in middle school. Why did I think it was important enough to share? I don't know. I'm just personalizing the dyad for you. And now we've become better friends for it. And this seems like a fair time to give a very condensed talk about what Ultra Games is. I'd be willing to bet that a fair number of listeners probably already know this, but I think it's interesting and it's worth talking about for a couple minutes anyway. 1983 saw the quote-unquote Great Atari video game crash in the United States. While I won't delve too deeply into that today, it boils down to this, in essence. After unrelentless waves of shovelware garbage flooded the US market, consumers finally decided that maybe this video game fad wasn't such a good idea after all. It nearly destroyed video games, and it decimated the US market. At least in America. Europe and Japan managed to weather the storm despite dealing with similarly poor games. For every decent title, there were many, many more terrible cash-ins, elbowing for shelf space. In fact, by the time the NES was set to debut here, Nintendo had to use creative marketing to trick the US market into carrying their consoles in the first place. But that, too, is a story for another episode. After finding a foothold in America, Nintendo opted to establish their own preventative measures. To Nintendo, if the video game crash was caused by a huge influx of crappy games, why not simply limit the number of games a company could release in the first place? And that's exactly what they did. Per Nintendo's decree, no company could release more than 5 games per year. And while that may have reined in companies like LJN, it only served to stifle companies like Konami. So they found a little workaround. By founding a shell company called Ultra Games, Konami effectively doubled their annual output. And while there were plenty of other restrictions that hampered Konami, i.e. disallowing their custom chip add-ons for their cartridges, Ultra Games doubled their US and European releases. Well, in Europe it was a company called Palcom, but they were doing pretty much the same thing. Ultra slapped their name tag on some of the NES's most memorable titles. Metal Gear, Skate or Die, and my personal favorite of their releases, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So there you have it. What I have seen rightfully described as chicanery, which I love, Ultra Games is a shell corporation for Konami to squeeze out more releases in America. And one last piece of trivia. Base Wars was the last NES game released by Ultra Games independently. It released some other games developed by other companies for about another year afterwards. As for a postscript, after Nintendo rethought their restrictions, there wasn't really a need for Palcom and Ultra. They both closed down in the early 90s. I feel a little badly for really only speaking on this in the most cursory fashion, but I gotta get back to more music, if you know what I mean. As with most of these kind of deep dives into video game history, there is a Retronauts episode which covers it in a little bit more detail. It may have been a Retronauts micro episode, so probably not too much more detail, but you're welcome to look it up if you want a little bit more about Ultra Games. Next, we are going to be moving to the Sharp X68000. From the game Soul Feast, composed by Motoi Sakuraba, this is Enemy's Arsenal, Mission 2. Soul Feast is another unremarkable shoot 'em up, originally released in 1990 and designed by Wolf Team for the Sharp X68000. It was then ported by Sega to the Mega CD and in North America to the Genesis by Renovation Products under the name Soul Dees. I trust you will believe me when I say that I tried to find out what the reason for changing one letter in the title was, but I didn't find anything, which actually frustrated me kind of a lot. So if anyone out there has any insight, I'd love to know why they needed to do that. Soul Feast was one of the first Mega CD games released, debuting in Japan as one of two launch titles for the system. The other launch title was Heavy Note. It also appeared as a launch title in Europe, and in North America, the game wasn't even released commercially. It was just a bundled software with the hardware. Most upsetting to me is that the Sega CD port eschewed the FM synth of the X68K in favor of rearranged Redbook audio. They also threw in some animated cutscenes and voiceover work. If anyone wants to get their hands on the complete OST in either form, both versions were uploaded to Amusement Center's Egg Music website. I've really been digging the X68K lately. I've been trying to spread around the systems I play tracks from. I like to try and work in variety when I can, but I think we might have to see a bit of a run on this computer for a while. I don't know, I guess stay tuned next week and find out. Short and sweet on the commentary for this one, we're going to move next to a double feature. Sticking with Japanese computers, these tracks come from a pair of PC-98 games. First, from the game Rusty, composed by Masahiro Kajihara, Kenichi Arakawa, and Ryu Takami, this is Queen in the Dark Night. Followed by the game Mobile Suit Gundam, A Year of War, composed by Toyo Kusanagi and or Ryu Umemoto, the track is called Zion 02. And that's just the name of the file dump. I don't know what the actual proper track title is, so Zion 02 it is. Take it away. Rusty is a Metroidvania released in 1993 for the PC-98, Epson PC, and MS-DOS. Developed and published by C-Lab, it's maybe more accurate to just call this a Castlevania clone. The protagonist is a leather-clad woman fit for a heavy metal album cover, or maybe the magazine Heavy Metal. And beyond just taking cues from Simon Belmont, she too wields a whip as she battles hordes of undead beasties. More technically correct, per the game's fiction, Rusty is a vampire hunter. With her sidekick Owl, she sets out to investigate a series of disappearances. And unlike most of the previous PC-98 games I featured on this podcast, this isn't a sexy investigation, just a plain Jane gruesome murder investigation. Some reviews have called it an homage to Castlevania, and I suppose that is a nicer way to describe it. I can't speak to any potential branching paths or other trappings that would secure it a spot in the Metroidvania pantheon, but it certainly looks the part from the gameplay I watched. And it has a fan base too. In fact, it saw an English translation earlier this year. In May 2017, the group 46 Okumen released an English patch. According to their website, the team was founded with the main goal of translating 46 Okunen Monogatari, the Shinkaron, into English. Based on the success of the translation, they branched out into other PC-98 games, and for anyone interested, I'll put a link to their website in the blog post for this episode. As for Mobile Suit Gundam, A Year of War, it is unsurprisingly a licensed game based on the Mobile Suit Gundam franchise. Interesting to me is that the company FamilySoft held an exclusive license to produce the series of games based on the intellectual property. They were mostly in the form of turn-based quote-unquote simulation games, but featured differing combat systems. For this game, the player has a top-down view somewhat like the Famicom Wars series. All in all, FamilySoft released 7 core Gundam titles plus expansions, A Year of War being the third effort. So far in the history of the podcast, the only time I talk about FamilySoft is when I play a Ryu Umemoto track, and this is no exception. Well, probably no exception. I saw some... conflicting isn't the right word, but some places list the possible composer as only Toyo Kusanagi. I'm pretty sure Umemoto worked on the game too, but I thought I would add that little caveat just in case. They may mean that, Kusanagi is the composer of this particular track, but as per a lot of the information available on the internet, it is not definitive enough for me to simply say it with confidence. For fans of the Gundam series, this might be worth it for you. While I'm unfamiliar with the source material, I do like strategy games, but this was a bit too dated feeling for me to even consider. Moving on, we'll be visiting the arcade. From the game Earth Defense Force, composed by Tsukasa Tawada and Yasuhiko Takashiba, this is Stage 4. Earth Defense Force, or sometimes EDF Earth Defense Force, is a 1991 horizontal shooter developed and published by Jalico. Originally designed for an arcade release, the game was later ported to the SNES. While both versions of the soundtrack are great, I opted to play one of the arcade selections today. This is an example of a game that, given enough episodes of the podcast, will eventually see every single track played. I really, really love it. The port made some questionable gameplay changes, inexplicably nixing the two-player co-op mode. The SNES version has the benefit of some additional graphics and selectable weapons, though. Not really a fair trade-off, in my opinion. The game was popular enough that it also saw Wii and later Wii U Virtual Console release. Also, I happened upon an eBay auction for an original Earth Defense Force arcade marquee. It costs an unrationalizable $80, but it's pretty awesome. I will also post a link to that blog post for the episode. You can claim it as your own and remove the temptation from me. Actually, there's one particular arcade marquee that I am looking for. So if anyone has a beat on the game Quizzes and Dragons, please let me know. Next up, from the Super Famicom, the game is Cat's Run, Zen Nippon Keikar Senshiken, composed by Yusuke Takahama, Satoshi Nagano, Michihiko Shichi. The track is called Street Race 5. Me of the Foods Panic track from the game Lord Monarch that I played way back in the early days of the podcast. I want to say it was episode 6, maybe? There's a lot of familiar instruments in this OST, really. I think I hear some of the horns from Mario Kart, maybe, as well. I plan to get into the SNES and its sampling in a future episode, so we'll move on for now. Cat's Run is a 1995 Japan-exclusive racing game that really looks and feels a lot like an F-Zero clone. It was released by Atlus, and there isn't much more to say about the game itself, really. It was a late release in the console lifecycle, and it did very little to distinguish itself from the other luminaries in the genre. As a result, it wasn't reviewed very well and seems largely forgotten. The title alludes to the subject matter of the game. K-Cars, and that warrants a little bit more discussion. K-Cars, spelled K-E-I, although often stylized as capital K-Cars, are a class of Japanese light automobile. It's a category of microvans and even mini pickup trucks. I think many people may recognize them, even if the description by itself doesn't really ring any bells. Think of the really tall, narrow cars you might see in Japan. The best-selling K-car is the Suzuki Wagon R. It's held the top spot since 2003. I'll throw a picture on the blog, and while I don't particularly recognize this one, I don't know, maybe I do. Maybe this is just the quintessential K-car. And either way, it kind of gets the job done when you're trying to picture this thing. I will mention that I found the graphics in the game to be pretty cool in parts. There are a lot of fairly detailed animations of the cars themselves that had a lot of personality. And while some of the instruments irk me a little bit, I found a number of tracks I enjoyed on the OST. I guess the bottom line is that it's probably not worth playing, but enjoyable enough to listen to. Well, what is now Power for the Course, I set out to do a quick show and ended up talking way more than anticipated. In any event, this will take us to the last track of the show. Before I go, as always, special thanks to Alan Euler, aka Periodical, for mixing and editing the show. You can follow the show at thedietpresents.blogspot.com, where I also post a track list for the show. You can subscribe via your favorite podcatcher, and please don't forget to rate the show on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at thedyad, and you can email me at thedyadpresents@gmail.com. There's a Facebook page you can find by searching for the name of the podcast or by at thedyad. You can also find me on Facebook via group or page. Seek me out at thedyad. I like to be seeked. I will not hide from your be-seeking. That's it. I've run out of dumb things to say about seeking. Until next time, from the game Battle Squadron, The Destruction of the Barrax Empire. And I should have read that in a yell because it does have an exclamation point at the end. Composed by Ron Claren, for the Amiga, this is the High Score music.